Welcome to Movie Trailer Reviews. This is Ro with my lovely guest host for the evening, Joy Childs, and we're here to talk about Don't Let Go. We got screeners for this, so the boys got left out because we didn't share. You may have heard about this movie out of Sundance. It got some mixed reviews. It stars, who are our main people here?
David Oyelowo and Storm Reid.
You just gonna leave Bubble Gump out? You're not even gonna say...
Oh! I can't pronounce the name, that's why I'm not saying it.
Michael Lita Williamson, Byron Mann, and Mrs. Tyree.
Yes, my husband, Brian Tyree Henry.
Does he know he married? I mean, just out of curiosity.
I will say that when I interviewed him, we were interviewing in person, and he complimented me, and we spent about 40 minutes together. So that is as good as married in my eyes. He don't know it yet, but it's fine.
Okay, as long as eventually he's informed that he is not available unless he talks to you first. But Don't Let Go is about a police officer who gets a phone call from his niece. He's pretty much her surrogate father because his brother is a person who has a criminal past and some mental issues that he's getting under control. And one day he walks into their house and discovers the entire family murdered. And a few days later, or weeks, I can't remember how much time they let lag between the death and her phone call. He gets a phone call from his niece who is in bed, and it turns out that, and she's calling him from the past. I know you saw this movie, was it at Sundance?
It was.
When it was called Sundance. Relive?
Correct. Definitely a different ending. I had a bit of mixed reviews seeing the film. I thought it was a very, how can I put it, very ambitious premise. I did not think it necessarily landed the plane as well as it could. I think this ending in this version is a bit better. And I will say that I enjoyed this film more this time around than I did at Sundance. I still do think that there is a little bit of tightening up that could have happened. Thought it was a wee bit too long for no reason. I will say, though, that what helps sell the film is David and Storm and that relationship. So overall, I enjoyed it.
I only knew a little about this movie, and I heard that the ending got changed because it kind of got smacked around a little by critics. So they did some reshoots and changes, but I hadn't heard anything else about it. I knew I was going to see it because it was David, and I have yet to not enjoy a movie that he's in to a certain degree. So I was all in for that. Now, my question is, do you know if this was based off the Harlan Coben book called by the same name, Don't Let Go?
I don't know, actually. I think that's a very good question. I have no clue.
Yeah, I don't think it is, but that's the first thing that came to mind when I first saw this. But I really felt like the story is very simple. It's kind of the standard police procedure. If you've seen Frequency, you're going to have some serious deja vu because they don't deviate too far away from the unexpected nature of his run-in with Supernatural. Now, on a different note, this movie does not really give you the explanation for why it is that they're able to connect and contact each other over time. Now, I don't really have a problem with people playing around with the space-time continuum as long as they tell me how. And this movie does not tell me how. I felt like they did a really good job of visualizing that they were dealing with the space-time continuum, especially when something was changed. I like how they visualized a change to the timeline. But this movie would have been helped if they had leaned a little bit more into the sci-fi elements of it, because it would have given it a bit more uniqueness and movement for a basic police story. And you know almost within minutes who the bad guy is. So once you know that, or at least I knew within minutes who the bad guy is. Now, it might just be because this person has done some interesting roles of late at this stage of their career, which tend to make me automatically think, and when I see him, that's the bad guy. Now, that may make me a terrible person, but that's what I think, Joy. It's what happens.
I mean, it's fine.
See, you know what? You just kind of co-sign on my strangeness. That doesn't really help me realize whether or not I'm being strange. So
He has a villainous face. Like, I don't know how else to describe it.
No, he really damn well does. And it's kind of, I was kind of hoping it was a red herring and it was someone else in the movie who I am also beginning to enjoy the things that they do. Played one of the police officers who's in the IAB. This is a spoiler-free review, so I'm trying to get to his name because don't remember it right now. Byron Mann plays Detective Roger Lee, who's an IAB investigating and following up on the murder. And Jack Radcliffe, played by David why can't I say his last name all of a sudden?
Oyelowo.
Yeah, we all just butchered his name. Sorry, we love you, David. And he isn't sure that he didn't kill his, or he didn't cause the death or the what led up to this family ending up dead in their house. And I was a little disappointed that they kind of went with the regular route when I felt like there was a lot of movement in what they could have played, especially when they kind of went the direction they did with what was the big reveal. And when it started to turn out that there was an open question of whether or not would they have ended up dead but for Jack talking to his niece in the past. And I felt like I might have enjoyed if they had played around with that more than them going straight forward through the whole whodunit aspect of how did I die? How do we keep this from happening? Thoughts?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think it's a combination of, don't laugh at me, I'm being so serious. I think it's a combination of stalling, but it wasn't because of her performance. It was because of the teenness of her girl, of her, like, the girlhood that she was portraying, and the overly questioning everything, you know, not listening when somebody tells you to listen. That was irritating to me, but again, I think that it is realistic for the most part to scale of what a teenage person would do if they are communicating with their uncle from the future.
Okay, that's true, but I am beginning to have a problem with this whole new trend of the petulant, disobedient black girl in serious and important situations when she should be listening to the person who has never failed her and deserves her trust. I had the same reaction when they kind of had the episode in the passage where no matter what he told her, she did the exact opposite. And I started to get a couple feelings in here where I was like, you're listening. He told you what was going on. But before he told you what was going on, he gave you very clear instructions about what you guys needed to do to keep everything together. And I don't like the whole retaliatory acting out trope that keeps showing back up, especially since they didn't do anything with it in this movie. And I felt like if they were going to do something with that, and it pushes and forces a change to the known timeline for Jack's character, I felt like they should have done something that was a bit more weighty or important. Because honestly, this movie isn't that long, but they had the time. So I felt like they could have played more with the psychological elements of the story and with the supernatural or second chance mystery kind of angles. So it's not quite a time travel movie as it is a time vortex movie, because you're a time continuum movie. No one's really going to the past.
Right. I would say that what I struggled with was not necessarily the teen petulance. I do think what I struggled with was how it was written. So I felt like it was written in a way that made Storm sound a lot younger than she was in real life.
Agreed.
Better suited to the passage where this is a young girl and her, like, she's like 11 or 12 versus Storm is a whole teenager. Went to prom. She looks like a teenager. She is a teenager. Like, it was a level of, like, prepubescent petulance that I think was how it was written. And I don't think it was her delivery, but I do think it was how it was written.
No, they did the best with what they had. And I think on certain levels, what they had failed them. Like, some of the dialogue was a little kitschy. But yeah, they sold it. This wouldn't have worked without David in the role. And I don't even know if another teenage girl would have been able to work with what little they gave with respect to character development than Storm Reed did. But it does concern me, because I can't tell if it's all the character, that there's a bit of flatness sometimes to what she gives.
I think that flatness is her. I'm just gonna be 100% frank, because I think did you watch Euphoria?
I have watched some. I'm not done.
Okay, so I'm not, without spoiling, you know, she plays Rue's sister. She plays Zendaya's sister. That's incorrect. Depending on how many episodes you've seen, that flatness is there too.
It is.
I would also argue that flatness was also there in When They See Us.
Oh, that flatness was absolutely there in When They See Us. It was also there in A Wrinkle in Time.
So, but there you go.
So yeah, I think she needs a little bit more emotional growth. Yeah. And I still am interested in seeing what the trajectory, because she is picking roles that will give it to her if she invests herself. And I feel like she was a little bit more invested in this than she was in the last thing that I'd seen her in. So I will go with that. But honestly, it's weird. It's creepy. It's the kind of movie which you go with your friends and you all just kind of like bet that you know what's happening and who the bad guy is and how it's going to turn out. And then the ride is just about seeing how they get you there. So I do think on some level, critics are expecting far too much from this movie. But I thought there was just enough whodunit hanging out in there, you know? But this really plays off of other movies in the same subgenre. And when you start talking about the other movies like Frequency and you get into the layers and the depths and all the stuff that was happening in there, you realize that this story did not develop this family enough for you to get the grip that you need to have on them.
One, I think this is a very interesting Blumhouse film to produce. Blumhouse has doubled down on black folk.
I'm okay with it.
And I'm not mad. I'm not upset in terms of how they doubled down post the Jordan Peele and era of his films.
Right.
They've really doubled down on black stories in horror with, you know, Candyman coming down the pipeline. Ma came out this year too. Jesus Christ, feels like eons ago where it came out. And now this, which I wouldn't say it's definitely not a horror film. It is more of a psychological thriller, more of a vortex. Like, I like that description of it's a time vortex kind of thriller.
It kind of worked.
But it worked, yeah, but I think it works within the Blumhouse, you know, wheelhouse, which is nice. The Blumhouse wheelhouse.
Jesus. Yeah, I thought it was quality. I liked the way that it looked. I just felt like they keep stepping their game up. I don't think this one stepped up quite as much as Ma did. I do feel like whatever the reshoots they did probably made it stronger. And I definitely appreciated this ending. So I don't know, how different is it from the original ending?
It's been a while since I saw the original ending because it was January, but this one is, I think there is like a little bit more, if I'm remembering correctly, a little bit more clarity to it. Like, I think it ties it better as an ending. This film in many beats, even whether you've seen the Sundance cut or this final cut, they do a lot of exploration for the amount of time that it's running, but doesn't go into explanation, which I find very interesting. I think in some places it needed it. In other places, it's fine. But I do think overall, I still had a good time kind of walking out. But I agree. What sells this film truly is David. He's also he was also the producer on this film. And so you can tell that he took that job seriously, which I appreciate. The score on this too is actually really good. I like the score.
I like the music. I like how it was spotted. I thought that really worked. I kind of like the visuals they gave to it and the parts of LA that felt really nondescript, but you still felt like you were in LA. Yeah. I just felt like there needed to be more criminal and familial entanglement, especially with the big huge reveal in what it was. And then they had a character that I was sad to see drop out just because he's such a dynamic actor, that I felt like if they had blended that in better and they hadn't gone for the obvious turn, that I think that that also would have aided the movie even more. But I enjoyed it. I like it. I think it's going to find an audience beyond what people are saying. It's a pretty simple fare, but it's relatively balanced. But you could tell that this movie was not necessarily written with a black preteen in mind.
So I got to interview David, and he mentioned in the interview that this film, his character was not written as a person of color. So I think that that is actually very spot on. I do not think that this was written with the intention of having people of color in the role.
No, because honestly, if you, I hate to say it this way, but there's just something that's different about having authentic human interactions that don't excise ethnic, cultural, racial, socioeconomic differences, that shows when you have a script that doesn't contemplate someone coming from a different experience saying those lines. And I think that's why sometimes you felt like the lines felt a little tinny or pannish, or they didn't hit the way that they should, because it's not how someone who's actually living that life in that skin would have said it, and or how they would have responded to a problem. Because there's just one moment in here where a 911 call, and I'm looking at this going, I'm like, ain't no way in the world. I'm like, y'all would have had to find another way to tie this around, because that moment happening right there with a little black girl would not have happened. Not like that. Ain't no way in the world.
Yeah. The other thing is you mentioned, you kind of alluded to it in terms of, you know, some wasted talent. So Brian Tyree Henry is in this movie. And, you know, I say this as his wife. I do feel that anytime you have Brian Tyree Henry in a film, we just talked about this in our Peanut Butter Falcon review. That man has never says no to a check. But when he gets very little, he does a lot with it.
Yeah, I was so invested in him the second they let him talk.
Oh my God. He, like, the very little that he always does, he does the most with it. And yeah. I just find it so interesting.
That's why I said I felt like if there had been more family entanglement, if we'd had more of those moments and encounters, and maybe an encounter between the two brothers, something.
Yeah, I think there was some information that was gapping in terms of why the relationship is the way that where it is. Why is him and his niece, you know, very close? And is there, you know, familial tensions because they're so close? And it seems like she has a okay relationship with her family, you know, her parents, but she really, 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 really loves her Uncle Jack.
Yeah, and I would have liked them to give me more than just kind of a muted backdrop with them popping off the screen for that. I would have liked some more show rather than tale.
And they had the space. It's, again, this is not a short movie. They had the capacity. They had the space to do it. But you know what? I think for what it is, I think it works. And I do think, to your earlier point, Ro, like, there is an audience for this. And I do think that there is going to be people who enjoy it. And if not for nothing, see David Oyelowo in anything that you can, because that man is talented.
Yeah, we need to keep him working.
Keep him employed, please. Make sure you are paying his bills, because he is just good, period. Like,
so is that what we should call this episode, wherein we keep David Oyelowo employed?
Listen, there's a couple of, I was going to say black actors, there's just a couple of actors that I'm just like, I'm going to make sure we grease your palms, sir. Mm-hmm. Him, Brian Tyree Henry, John Berthal, there's a few of them where I'm just like, hey, we got to make sure. Yeah, ooh, Gugu, give my girl Gugu a check, please. Please, yeah. Always. She's so, in Motherless Brooklyn.
Motherless Brooklyn. I'm in. That's why I want to see.
That's the only reason why I want to see it. I could take or leave Edward Norton, but what I can keep always is Gugu.
Right. If you had to give this a score, what would you rate it?
I'll give it like a 7.5. Yeah, I'll give it a 7.5.
Okay, and this is 7. David needs a check with lots of zeros on it. So please. Yeah, I've seen better, but I don't know whether or not I've seen this particular type of cop acted better.
That, I think, is the best summary of it. I think you put David in anything, like, shit's gonna sell, like, in terms of how he performs and how he delivers the role. And you can tell he's very invested in it, just off the strength of, one, him just being a consummate professional and good at his job, but also because he's a producer, and you can tell that there's a certain level of gravitas that he took to that.
Right.
And my man is trying to be multi-talented, because he's directing a film.
I mean, come on, he's fully trained. He should be in front of the camera, behind the camera, everywhere.
Hey, agreed.
What's he about to direct, though?
What is David about to direct? Shoot. It's based on a book, The Waterman.
Yeah.
The Waterman.
Everybody, just get ready to go see that one. Just mark your calendars for his feature debut film, The Waterman.
He also is in Chaos Walking, this Daisy Ridley, Tom Holland film that has yet to be released.
Well, he's always on my radar. He's always on your radar, which means, ladies and gentlemen, he's on your radar because we're going to talk about him. We're a little bit super mellow because it's late, but we didn't want to leave out, you know, what Chris would call a black film with black people because we black. So be sure to hit Don't Let Go up. It opens nationwide this Friday, August 30th. We got plenty of reviews that'll be up on the site. We'll have probably a little bit of review with this audio view on the site. If you want to hear anything else we think about this movie before you decide to go.
We are now officially, weather's done change, you know, a bitch needs a sweater now. We are now hitting fall film slates, which
is peak award. Oh, you mean film slates? Because I know you don't mean the weather. It is hot.
No, I said fall film slates, like, in general. For me, the weather's changing. A bitch doesn't need a sweater. No. But yeah, fall film slate, guys, which is my favorite time of the year. I love fall film slate.
That's when things get interesting, man.
Oh, that's because people be like, fuck it, let's go. Like, they get weird. I love it.
Yeah. Expect us to be busy. We're going to have a bunch of limited release films we'll be doing the reviews for, and we'll put those up on the site for you. So if they hit your town, you can definitely go check them out in a movie theater. Probably going to throw some documentaries in the mix because I have them and I make people talk to me about them because I'm not the only one who wants to know. I know our listeners do too. And we'll check in with you soon. And be sure to like and follow all things MTR Network so we can get all our stats up so they keep giving us the things to know.